COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right.
Yeah, your mic was on for that.
Yeah, was my mic on for that entire yawn? No.
Yeah, it was. Okay. Well, that's Brian yawning. That's so excited great. To be here. Be back
did
to work
I tell you I was
days.
Up at 3:30 a.m. today?
Yeah, that happens. You got kids. You're going to get up early.
No, it wasn't even the kids' fault this time.
You just got up?
No, my stomach just was like hurting like crazy. Not even like anything gross. I was just like hurting. It was weird.
Jeremy will be back on the show Monday. He's traveling with the Cougs for their game out west against what? Oregon State?
Oregon State, yeah.
This weekend?
The Bum Beavers.
Yeah. I want to talk a little college football in the next segment because we had another coach firing. We've got four openings already in college football this year. I'd forgotten about Stanford.
How many can John Gruden fill?
We're going to do a segment tomorrow that we were talking about doing today because we got some wild suggestions yesterday.
Okay.
For Texans offensive coordinators.
Oh, really?
I'm eager
to hear these names.
And then we got a text earlier about Martin Maldonado being the new Astros manager. So I think tomorrow we're just going to go off the deep end for who should replace Joe Espada if you're going to fire him and who should
no
replace
bad answers.
Nick Cayley. No bad answers. And John Gruden's going to be first on my list as a teaser. And honestly, I think I might just be serious.
I don't know, man. That offense looked pretty outdated even with it was the Raiders, and that was, what, 4 or 5 years ago at this point?
Yeah. All right, before we get to some of the 3-0 teams and 0-3 teams, let's talk about the Texans' 0-3 start with Rocky on the HRMP listener line. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's going on, guys? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I want to hit on. First thing is, I read the article with D'Amico Ryans on the C.J. Gardner-Johnson thing. He was talking about how he has a pulse of the locker room and, you know, he knows what his team needs and it was his decision. And my question is, why did we let Nick Caserio hire another rookie offensive coordinator to basically not benefit the quarterback and having a veteran OC that can come in and help him out? And then my second thing was Nick Caserio. You know, you hired David Culley, then you hired Pep Hamilton, and those guys didn't work out. And then you hire D'Amico, everybody's happy about that. But then you hire an offensive coordinator that's a rookie with your quarterback on his first year, not really doing him any justice as well. So I guess my thing is this is all on Nick Caserio, and D'Amico Ryans is not getting a pass on this as well. But there's no way we can go into next year, you know, if we're only winning a few games and him making decisions on who the next OC is or head coach for that matter. So that's just my opinion. I'll hang up and let y'all talk.
Thanks, Rocky. Appreciate the call. You guys are welcome in 713-780-3776 to the text line, to the HRMP listener line. So the first part about D'Amico knowing what's best for his team and letting Nick Caserio hire Nick Cayley. Now, DJ Bieniemy, who, you know, obviously covers the Texans for ESPN.com, he's been pretty adamant, you know, on Twitter that D'Amico Ryans makes the final decision on coaching hires. Now, it's my opinion that because of, I don't know, they probably never met before, that Nick Cayley was clearly highly suggested by Nick Caserio. I view it as a Nick Caserio hire that D'Amico had to eventually sign off on. And that's why I think when you talk about hot seats and things like that, I put Nick Caserio on it for everything that you just mentioned with Nick Cayley specifically. It's a bad hire. This guy doesn't He's running an archaic system. He doesn't know how to adjust. They're watching film from the mid-2000s. That was confirmed by the quarterback. They are not running it in any similar way, I also think. Like, I don't think we're seeing, like, the things that made Brady so successful. Where's the Wes Welker in this offense? Where's the Julian Edelman in this offense?
Like, could be Jalen Nolan, but they're not playing him.
Yeah, like, it could be Christian Kirk, and he was open sometimes, but, like, if you're banking on a guy who's been hurt his entire career, basically, except for his first year in Jacksonville, to fill that void, that's tough. I don't know why Dick Caley is the hire. I think at this point, like, too, I'm not sure Chip Kelly, like, solves these problems. If he would have been the hire, like, I think there might be more larger issues at hand with the Texans' offense, and that goes from the receivers you've drafted or not using the offensive line you've been bringing in. I think we are seeing some regression from C.J. Stroud, but it's totally fair. It's totally fair about the Nick Caley hiring and his role in it. As far as the other coaches, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's you know it's going to be the worst era of Texans football, and they hired a patsy, basically, in David Culley. They fired him after a year because he was a joke, a laughingstock in the NFL. Nick Casario was on the headsets. He had to fire him. You replaced him with Lovie Smith. You fired him. Yeah, Pep Hamilton. I mean, Pep Hamilton at the time people thought was a good hire. Obviously, it hasn't worked out. I don't even think he's in the NFL. I think he's with NFL Network still. He was doing stuff locally on Fox last year, I think it was, on one of the TV stations. Like, I'm not going to hold that one against Casario. I'm not going to hold Lovie Smith and David Culley. No one in their right mind would take this job. No good coach would have said, I want the Houston Texans job. You had nothing to prove that someone should take a flyer. The only coaches that would have come here are coaches who are old and begging for their last chance to be head coaches.
Or begging to get any chance. Like, David Culley had never been even an offensive coordinator anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I think we... Look, those two coaches were obviously, their records reflect their ability, I think, at this point. But those two coaches, like, to your point, were the only guys they could get. Like, maybe they could have technically got better than David Culley because everyone they could have possibly chosen would have been better than David Culley because he was the most unqualified head coaching hire I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But Nick Casario at that time knew the assignment. He knew the assignment was lose games, tank. It didn't matter what name you put out, you know, next to head coach. They were losing for two seasons, and I think everyone around the league knew that. So they're, like, to your point, like, they weren't going to attract a top level head coach because mm-hmm. everyone knew they were tanking for two seasons. So I assign no blame to Nick Casario on that one. Now, I do assign a great amount of blame for this Nick Caley hire because I know, like you pointed out with DJ Bieniemy, that DeMeco technically has the final say on these coaching decisions. And I do believe that to be true, not only because it makes sense, but I do trust DJ's reporting. But that could be as simple as, well, he signed off on it, but it wasn't like his idea that this should be the guy. Like, it wasn't someone,
yep.
like you pointed out, wasn't someone he'd worked with that he knew personally. The person in the organization who'd worked with Nick Caley and knew him personally was Nick Casario. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way you could convince me logically that Nick Caley wasn't a Nick Casario hire. And regardless of who made the decision, we're now two times in a row that the Texans have passed over experienced play callers and made the conscious decision to put the fate of their rookie quarterback, the second overall pick in the draft, in the hands of guys who have never been tested at the NFL level
yep.
as a play caller. That's just gross malpractice, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, you have four. You have your head coach, your defensive coordinator, your offensive coordinator, your special teams coach. Half of them attended the same university as Nick Casario. Nick Caley is a John Carroll grad. Frank Ross is the only guy who stood through those two regimes into the DeMeco era. He's also a John Carroll grad. Like, those have Nick Casario's fingerprints written all over them. So it's totally fair. Mm-hmm. We asked the question
yesterday. And a lot of them have experience with the Patriots as well. While he was there, Cole Popovich and Nick Caley yep. both.
Jeremy asked on Twitter yesterday, like, should the Texans have hired Sean Payton instead of DeMeco Ryans? DeMeco won the poll, not by much. But, like, you can talk about Kevin O'Connell, you know, being the hire instead of DeMeco if you want.
I'd rather have Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think DeMeco is the wrong hire. I think DeMeco can still be the right coach for this team. But, like, we don't see coaches get three offensive coordinators. We don't see general managers typically get three head coaches. Now, they did that, obviously. It's just like the 49ers did it. The Texans have done it. It doesn't typically happen. But you also have – you'll be on your – so your fourth offensive coordinator under – nope. Your like sixth offensive coordinator under Nick Caserio.
Yeah, I would lop the first few off of because –
Bill O'Brien, yeah. Tim Kelly – and then you have Pep Hamilton and then, you know, Bobby Slowick, Nick Caley, and then whoever's hired next. Like, the hiring process has not been great under Nick Caserio. That's why I view the offensive line. Like, it hasn't really been fixed. It's been a problem since he got here to help Deshaun Watson. It hasn't really helped out a lot. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Let's talk to Eddie. Eddie, what's going on? Eddie. Do you have it potted up, Ryan?
It's on the right channel.
Do you Hey, guys.
What's up, man?
You know, I'm just curious what you got. Just curious what you guys think. You know, when I look at CJ, I wonder sometimes if he can just elevate the offense himself. And I know we have problems with Nick Caley. You guys went through that pretty thoroughly, but. You know, I look at a guy like Joe Burrow, and he's never had a good offensive line, and happens to make some magic work. Is that something we could maybe expect of CJ? Is that too much to ask? I'm just curious what we can do right now and who we can count on.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's Eddie. I think it's a good point. It's a good question. If CJ Stroud can elevate the people around him, I mean, it's. How many quarterbacks need to be better around them? I would say 95% of them.
Yeah, I think we had that as a possible conversation. Like I came up with seven quarterbacks that could make do with like subpar.
Really?
Yeah,
seven.
Like that could function with subpar weapons around them.
Okay, Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh Allen.
Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
Joe Burrow.
Yep.
Patrick Mahomes.
Yep. I have three more.
Who?
Hurts?
No.
You don't think so?
No. Absolutely not.
I think he could. Because of the running, I think he could.
I don't think so.
I mean, they won two games in the first 2 weeks where A.J. Brown had like one target each
in
those games. Like I know technically A.J. Brown was on the field, but he didn't throw to him.
Against the Cowboys, who have an awful defense, they scored 24 points, and the Chiefs, who have been awful this year. In the first half, they were down bad to the Rams until he finally started to throw to A.J. Brown. And I'm not trashing Jalen Hurts. I just don't think he's in that category of where, like...
Okay, well, we're obviously going to disagree after that, but the other two I had on the list, I think you're really going to hate these, would be Justin Herbert and Jayden Daniels.
Herbert, I think, is fine to put on there. I think when what we've seen from him, it was really bad with Staley as the head coach. He hasn't had much of a run game. I don't think he needs a ton of talent to elevate him. I think Quentin Johnson's a guy who has had a major drops problem.
I mean, he's
in
throwing
his career
to Will Disley right now.
Yeah, I mean... Ladd McConkey is a good player, it seems like, but you've got an old Keenan Allen out there. I think Herbert's fine to put in that category. Who was the other one?
Jayden Daniels, because he had Terry, but like, name a great offensive player that's around Jayden Daniels besides Terry, and Terry hasn't even done that much this year.
Yeah, I think it's a little too early for me to put him in that category.
That's fair. I should couch it as it's trending that way. Yeah, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. Like he's trending towards a guy that can do a lot with a little. I mean, Terry McLaurin, like his stats weren't really that much better with and without Jayden Daniels,
except for touchdowns. Yeah,
their running back room has been depleted pretty heavily. Even their new kid, Bill or Jacob, whatever he wants his name to be this week, is hurt.
Ja'Cory Kroski-Murray.
We'll see. I mean, because Terry McLaurin's probably not going to play a lot this season. You know, Debo's been helpful, and obviously Jayden Daniels has missed time. It sounds like he could return this weekend. But they did look pretty good with Marcus Mariota.
They did.
So
yeah, he scored. Mariota scored twice. They crushed their opponent. So maybe we should carry this conversation over the other side, because I do have some thoughts about what the last caller said on CJ's ability to carry a team, but I don't want to force it in here.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll get to Donald. We'll get to that on the other side here. It is Jeremy and Joe here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up on October 4th and 5th, it's Oktoberfest at the Kima Boardwalk. It's an event that is free to the public to attend and walk around. We go to the Kima Boardwalk all the time. I love taking Joseph there with my wife. It's always a good time. There's so much to do, and this is going to be a fantastic event. Beer tickets, beer signs, and food tickets can be purchased at the event or online today. I'd buy them online. Why are you going to wait in lines? Get them today online at KimaBoardwalk.com. They'll also have a full set of events on Saturday the 4th and Sunday the 5th, starting on Saturday with the Cornhole Tournament from 1 to 8 p.m., the Oktoberfest DJ and polka dance performances going in the afternoon. They'll have Steinholding competitions, a costume contest, and a DJ and music on Saturday night. Plus, they'll have live music on Sunday from 5 to 9 as well. It's coming up quick. Oktoberfest, the 4th and the 5th of October at Kima Boardwalk. See the full schedule events and concert lineup at KimaBoardwalk.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
My favorite texter that loves me so much, 1429, says, Terry McLaurin won't play a lot this season, Joe, do you think what you say? Think about what you say before you say it? Yes. He's seeking a second opinion on his injury. So, no, I don't expect to see a lot of Terry McLaurin.
I at least don't expect him back for a few weeks at minimum. Like, you may have gone a little too far with won't play much this season. But, yeah, like, if you're going out seeking a second opinion for your injury, it's because the first opinion was bad for you and you don't like it. It's we've seen that with Astros players quite a few times. Like, it means it's going to be a longer term injury.
If he's not going to play this week and then he's going to end up on the injured reserve for 4 weeks after that, I would consider that a lot of
especially when it's how many times have we seen it when it's a guy that sits out for most of training camp and then tries to ramp it up real quickly right before the season. They like these things seem to happen at a pretty high frequency.
It is the concern of when guys don't play, like, you know, like Cook has been a little bit of the exception of that. Not a little bit, a lot of
at least he returned before camp was over, though.
Yeah, so it's been like McLaurin. Like, we'll kind of wait and see. But we got a question here on Christian Kirk on the HRMP listener line from Donald. Donald, what's going on?
Not much. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, no, so I was in a dilemma real quick. Christian Kirk, he hasn't really done much at all for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's kind of a fantasy question. I'd rather take Wandell Robinson with New York Giants over Christian Kirk. Is that a smarter move?
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I'd rather have Wandell.
Yeah, I probably have. I mean, we'll see what it looks like with Jackson Dart. Thank you for the call, Donald. I mean, look, Christian Kirk, I think, like, three catches in one game, eight targets. I think the eight targets is the more important thing to this for the Texans offense. There's clearly an intention. We talked earlier about, like, where's the Wes Welker in this offense? Like having him have eight targets in a game, I do think is a sign that we should expect to see more from Christian Kirk, for example, compared to what we've seen from Higgins and Knoll. Like, I don't quite understand, like, why those guys were, you know, drafted in the position they were and are not active parts of the game plan for this team. I don't really get it. But Kirk was in his first game back with the Texans. And I think we talk about the Texans offense being better and like what it's going to look like this year. I think a lot of it starts there. You know, it's Woody Mark should be the RB1. Like, he should be the guy that getting the primary amount of carries for the Houston Texans. And Christian Kirk has to be involved. He has to stay healthy to open things up for other guys. And we saw, you know, there was the one pass where CJ was a little short and it was a near interception where Higgins had his guy beat. I think he's got the goods from what we've seen so far, just limited sample size. I would like to see a lot more of him.
Do you think this is a case of a guy like D'Amico being a hard-nosed coach, just not trusting rookies?
Well, I guess it's Nick Haley question, right?
Yeah, but I think D'Amico would override him if he thought Higgins and Knoll already, because neither guy is playing that much.
No.
Higgins is playing more than Knoll. Knoll's mostly been a special teamer, but I've liked what I've seen at a limited sample size of Knoll, but he's barely seeing the field.
Yeah, yes, in a way. I mean, he's played young guys before. He's starting to left tackle.
Obviously, Woody Marks, his playing time shot up.
Yeah. But Nick Haley does come from the Patriots organization, in which this is apparently a very complex offense in which the wide receivers and the quarterbacks have to be on the same page for all their option routes and different things. So, like, do you expect a rookie wide receiver to grasp that right away? I'd probably say no. At this point, a couple other questions here on the text line. From the 3338, do we have any idea on Joe Mixon as of yet? We do not. I'm not going to say where. Joe Mixon was spotted in a photograph at a local restaurant yesterday. So he's at least back in
Houston. One that I would recognize?
Yes. So he's at least back in Houston. I don't know if that means anything.
I mean, the last thing D'Amico Ryan said was in past tense, and then, like, we wish him well. Like,
yeah.
I mean, take from that what you will. I take from that they don't expect to see him this year.
Yeah, they used a lot of past tense
yeah.
when talking
about but like specifically the line, like, we wish him well. Like, I mean, what is he? Is he retiring? Like,
I mean, we don't know. Look, we don't even know how he got hurt.
I don't think we ever will. Like, I wouldn't expect anything from Joe Mixon this season.
No, to Lamont's point earlier, when he called in asking about the media and not having real information until a player is gone, I don't know if we're going to get full answers on Joe Mixon until he's no longer part of the picture here of what actually happened.
I don't know if we will, because I think a part of it is what's become a battle with D'Amico and certain members of the media.
And injuries, yeah.
Yeah, specifically Aaron Wilson. Like, I think because there was so much hostility back and forth on that. Well, mostly coming from the Texans, the being mad at the media and then calling them out about not living up to journalistic practices or whatever nonsense D'Amico said, talking about how people didn't, you know, double check their sources. Like, well, how can we get the information if you're not willing to give it to us? He forgets that part of it. But yeah, because of that, like, I don't expect whatever, unless Joe Mixon says it himself, I don't think we'll ever get the full details on that.
And if he plays this year, I think we will. Like, if we actually see him. He is on the short-term injured reserve, so I guess he's...
Isn't that more of a technicality?
It is, because it doesn't knock him out for the season, but that does open the possibility of, you know, a post-week four. There will be questions after the fourth game, after this weekend, about Joe Mixon, because of the timeline in which that allows him to return. So I don't
we'll over under curious. Week 9.5.
Oh, I'm over. Okay. I don't think he's playing.
All right.
This season.
I thought you were with me that I mean I think he misses the season.
8807, besides CJ and Nico, name another player on this offense that would start around the league. I mean, Christian Kirk
would.
But I think the question is, I think more of an impact question. Titus?
Yeah, but would not start on a lot of offense. There's other guys that
he
think
would
that
start
would,
on, yeah.
There's definitely other guys that would start, but CJ in a better system and Nico are the only guys I think that would be impact players elsewhere. And Mixon if he was healthy.
I love this text. 7308. Maybe Nick Haley is calling the bad plays now to lull the rest of the league to sleep so they're not prepared when he starts calling the good plays later in the season.
The problem, like, I get the joke. I mean, John Lance made that joke, and it's fun to have fun with it, but... Like, I don't think he has the good plays. That's the problem. Like, to kind of take the joke into the actual reality. Like, you talked a minute ago about, running the Patriots system. I think you mentioned in a previous segment they're watching, like, CJ confirmed they're watching highlights from, like, 2005. Mm. Like, this guy is running such an outdated offense. It's such a non-quarterback-friendly offense that I don't think the good plays are ever coming. Yeah. And even if they are coming... And he suddenly figures it out. Do they have the talent to make it work? Because the offensive line, even though it's, I think, third on the pecking order of blame, it's still a problem for the team.
Yeah, someone just texted in Josh McDaniels. I mean, it's not exactly going great in New England right now.
Well, do we want to replace an outdated New England offense with Josh McDaniels?
No, I would.
Like, that's not the answer to me.
No, I think Mike McDaniel is going to be the guy that catches the most interest.
Yes. A quarterback-friendly system. That's what, look, I mean, what you pointed out with, like, the receivers, that, like, as far as young guys getting on the field, like, it's hard for them to get on the field because the offense is complicated because there's so many option routes that the quarterback and the wide receiver, and you got two wide receivers, or rookie wide receivers, that is, and a first-year player on the team trying to work into that. Like, you're trying to work in a first-year player on the team in Christian Kirk and two rookie wide receivers into a system because of how many option routes there are and how complicated it is that the quarterback and the wide receiver have to be on the exact same page with, okay, we're seeing this type of coverage, this is how we react. They both have to see it the exact same way at the exact same time. That's I'm not saying it's an impossible ask, but unless you have Tom Brady, it feels like an impossible ask. I don't know why they ever decided to go away from, look, I know Bobby Slowick wasn't a great coordinator, but that doesn't mean you throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? You can still go from to somebody else from that tree who runs a quarterback-friendly system instead of reverting back to 2005.
See, 0967, no one will ever make the old Patriot system work because nobody has Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It doesn't work anywhere. It doesn't work. It's not a good system. It's why all these coaches have gone elsewhere and gotten fired. And whether it's head coaches or offensive coordinators or college football coaches, like, it does not work. What's up, Ryan?
So if in the offseason we end up having to let go of, say, Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, do you think that there's any chance of pulling a high-profile college coach like, say, Ryan Day?
I don't have interest in that because it doesn't
work. Yeah, I don't either.
Ryan Day's the one that I would be the most open to be honest with you, of like a guy that can – if you're going to go the college route.
Texas couldn't beat Michigan then, though.
Yeah, they couldn't, but they could win the Super Bowl. So Ryan Day is the only name in the college football ranks that if the Texans were to fire D'Amico Ryans, and I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to give him another offensive coordinator, another chance to try to figure this out.
Absolutely.
I think Nick Caserio could get terminated. I don't think his job should be safe, ultimately. I'm not as impressed with him as everyone else. Like, is it hard to draft Derek Stingley Jr. over Sauce Gardner?
I mean, that was a pretty big debate.
But let's say he didn't do it. Anyone really upset that Sauce Gardner's here?
No, like it's not a big drop off.
Okay,
yeah.
Is anyone the cojones to trade up for Will Anderson? Like, if they just took Will Anderson and CJ Stroud?
Now, you're overlooking some pretty big hits though in the middle rounds. Like, you're overlooking Nico Collins in the third round.
Yeah, Nico's good.
You're overlooking
Lassiter's good.
Yeah, Kamari Lassiter in the second round. I mean, obviously, Jalen Petrie's fallen off, but Jalen Petrie was a good pick in the third round.
He was good until you paid him.
Tank Dill, if you didn't use him as an inline blocker, was a great pick in the third round.
I agree.
And Damian Pierce only happened for 1 year for whatever reason, but Damian Pierce was a good rookie out of the fourth round. So, I mean, I guess I like Caserio more than you, but I'm willing to make that move as well. Less so because his track record doesn't impress me, and more so because I don't trust his decision making in this aspect. Mm-hmm. Like, he's great at finding wide receivers, he's great at finding defensive backs. I'll go as far to say he's elite in both those places. Where he's not great, or he's maybe one of the worst GMs in the league, is picking an offensive lineman and picking offensive play callers. Mm-hmm. And again, like, to kind not to beat a dead horse, but to go back to something we were talking about earlier, like, if you're using the same decision makers to fix what they broke, why do you think they're going to get it better the next time?
Yeah, I just look, and we'll see how the Texans handle it. I mean, again, he just got apparently a contract extension as well. Again, the Texans organization.
4 years left.
Yeah, the Texans organization, though, is not afraid to move on from those guys. Jeremy and I pointed out they were paying four head coaches at one time. The first year that D'Amico was here, they were paying Bill O'Brien, Cully, and Lovey. Honestly, they still might be paying one of those guys. I think it's over now.
They've got to be. Well, Bill O'Brien's over.
Yeah.
I think they would be still paying Lovey because that was a 4 year deal.
Yeah.
22, 23, 24, 25.
I think
I think they are paying Lovey.
Yeah. We're gonna combine these breaks here. We're gonna keep it rolling here, Ryan. Let's go out to the HRMP listener. Let's go out to Alan. Alan, what's going on?
Hey, do you guys remember if CJ hurt his shoulder over the off season and did he get surgery? And maybe he just ain't healed yet. I mean, I just don't remember them throwing downfield in the course. He probably don't have time to throw it downfield, but anyways, any weight to that his shoulder could still be hurt?
It's hard to say. Like, I don't view it like with what we're seeing from CJ as a guy that's like not whipping the ball around the field, and it doesn't obviously like he doesn't have a cannon for an arm. He's more of a placement guy. I don't see like a concern for that. Frankly, like, I don't think it would be an excuse, even if it was bothering him a little bit at this point. It's, you know, if it was that bad, then he wouldn't be playing. So I don't think it's much of a concern for me. It goes back to the injury stuff. Like, how did his shoulder get injured? Like, I don't think the reason why he's missing throws, like the interception on the attempt to Christian Kirk, that was just a bad ball. I don't think that's a shoulder injury. I think that's a poor pass. I don't know.
He also got tipped.
No, the first interception.
Oh, the first one. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think the mistakes we're seeing from C.J. Stroud this year are because of an injury. I think they're just – it's bad play.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, there was the whole thing during – I think it was during OTAs in June where he wasn't throwing and people lost their mind to the point where we made like a Shrouded in Mystery drop to talk about the latest ongoings with C.J. throwing or not throwing. But yeah, like when I've watched CJ play, like I don't notice any less zip on the ball. I don't notice that the ball's not getting to where, to the same places that it used to. To me, it's what we've talked about. Sometimes it's that he doesn't have enough time. Sometimes I think he sees the pressure and drops his, Lance has talked about this, but he'll see the pressure, drop his head, stop looking back downfield, and basically kind of turtle and run and start running backwards. Like he's gotten to a point. In part because the play of the offensive line has beaten it into him, but he's gotten to a point where he's, I think, becomes shell-shocked, and he doesn't react to pressure the way he did as a player at Ohio State or in his rookie year here with the Texans, where he starts to retreat instead of, you know, take a little sidestep or step up in the pocket. So there's that. And there's also, I mean, let's throw Nick Haley into this. Like when I've seen some of the wide shots on the All-22 film, for the Texans, like you see some of these route combinations they're throwing out there, and you'll see two or three guys all running to basically the same spot in the field. Like, so it's kind of all of the above. The receivers aren't separating. The route combinations are terrible. CJ's not reacting to the blitz well or the pressure well, and the offensive line is not playing well at times. But I don't think CJ has any signs of a shoulder injury based upon how he's throwing the football.
6691, how complicated is to run an offense that consistently goes three and out? Good question. 8807, I thought Kaylee was supposed to run McVay's offense.
Looks we same. Thought so. We hoped.
Yeah, I mean,
we hoped.
I thought maybe we'd see a Patriots blend of McVay.
Nope.
But it's just Patriots.
It's just Patriots. It's not even the good one. It's like the one that Matt Patricia was running. It's like really like that Patriots. Like it's. I mean, I think it was – didn't Todd Bowles say after the game – I can't remember the exact comment, but he basically pointed out, I was like, yeah, we thought, you know, we may see some Rams stuff, but it was just Patriots.
Yep, that's it's exactly just Patriots. What 6207 asks, any chance Mike McDaniel gets fired by the end of the season and the Texans bring him in as OC? You're not going to see him come in as OC this year. I think there's a path to where you could bring him in as a consultant if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. First part of it, absolutely. I think he does get fired before the year's over, but he wouldn't be made, like you said, he wouldn't be made Texans OC this year. That would maybe, like you said, consultant, and then if they fire Kaylee, he could be the guy to replace him.
Yeah, it could be a next season thing. And even like as a consultant, like you're not running that offense. So we saw Robert Saleh go back to the 49ers last year, midseason, to consult with them, and then it being named the defensive coordinator there in San Francisco. So you know, it would probably tip the hand of what the Texans are doing. I don't, you know, they're not going to come in and change everything. And who knows when that actually is going to take place? I with Mike McDaniel, like I don't know, but
you know, it'd be interesting to see what Mike McDaniel does with Nico Collins, because like his choices at wide receiver are all 5'9", 170-pound guys. I mean, really, same thing at running back. Like he prefers speed over size. It'd be interesting to see what he does with Nico Collins.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see him with just a better quarterback.
Yeah,
like, well, we've seen him have success with Tua, with quarterbacks that have replaced Tua. Like he's had good games as the play caller there in Miami. And the thing is, like the issues that they have about not, you know, players reportedly not being on time to meetings, not, you know, having good attitudes, like that goes away because it's D'Amico's team, not Mike's team. So like I think that could work. That to me is going to be the fan favorite option. If there is an offensive coordinator change, I say if because I don't think it's a guarantee that they do.
Man, yeah, okay. The only way you're right, and this is not to call you out on that take at all, but the only way you're right in that there might not be an offensive coordinator change is if it improves. There's no way you can tell me like if it is copy paste for the next 14 weeks or 14 games that the offense looks like this. I don't think Nick Haley even makes it to the end of the season, much less into next year.
I hope you're right, because if they didn't make a change in this offseason, then D'Amico would be betting his job, because then there would be no answer for why he should be the head coach of the Texans if he kept Nick Haley into next season and these issues continued. 5754, who's going to have a better record this year, the Texans or the Cowboys? Probably bet on the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think I would, because I'm kind of thinking the Texans win five games right now, and I think the Cowboys can get to six or seven. So yeah. I'll go Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think they might make a defensive coordinator change before the season's over.
I mean, hey, Matt Eberflus finally made Caleb look good, though.
Yeah, he did. took him a year, but I think right now I'd bet on the Cowboys. They have a better record, mainly because they have a one game advantage. So I don't.
It kind of feels like a race to the bottom. A contest to see who can outsuck the other. But yeah, I would lean Cowboys.
Let's see. 3358. As a successful high school coach of 32 years, what credentials do you two have to have to critique football?
Oh boy, is this a Ryan Clark argument?
I get paid to do it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how else to answer.
All right,
that question.
Thank you for the text, Ryan Clark.
I don't know how else to answer that question.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan Clark.
That's what we get paid to do. I guess is to critique football. All right,
successful in college football. 26. Thank you.
Same. All right, we'll take our break. When we get back, we will do our car wreck of the day. We'll talk about the Astros game tonight. Hunter Brown on the mound as the Astros try to get back on track and really get this thing rolling again so they can hopefully make the playoffs. Because I had to send the schedule out today for next week, and I put TBD Astros playoff games airing on the station thanks to our friends at ESPN. All right, St. Arnold, a beer for everyone. Their beer garden is a place for everyone and for private events. They've got a space for everyone. Weddings, family reunions, big birthday bashes, holiday parties, especially for your companies. Like It's October, basically. So if you're looking for a Christmas party, Thanksgiving, something like that, I mean, I know we mostly do Christmas parties only. St. Arnold is the place to do it at. They got spaces for groups of 20 people to 300 people. We had about 250 people there for the ESPN Listener Appreciation Party. Didn't feel cluttered at all. A wide open space. Joseph there in the process of setting up was great to work with. He made it so simple and easy for us. And right now, since you're a listener to this fine station, mention ESPN or my name, Joe, and you can receive their brewery game package free for your event. That game package gets you a combo of dartboards, Jenga, cornhole, the pool table, and as a bonus, the photo booth. Get started right now at StArnold.com. Click on private events. That's StArnold.com. Click on private events.
ESPN 97.5. This is Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
All right, Hunter Brown on the mound tonight for the Houston Astros. No lineup yet.
Can he catch a pop fly?
I think
that's
he can.
The first question we have to answer.
I think he can.
Okay, all right. Signs pointed up then, Joe.
Yep. The Astros said they know we've got to wake up.
Well, thank you, Astros. Is that official press release? Who's that coming from?
I think Correa said it.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong.
Well, if it's Correa, then it's great leadership. If it's anybody else, who cares?
All right. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it goes tonight. We're going to take a call here.
I mean, I expect him to win. Do you expect him to win?
Yeah.
I don't expect it to matter in the long run, but I expect Brown's him to win tonight.
I'm opposite of you. I still think they're going to make the playoffs because I just don't believe in the Tigers. I think they're going to continue to fall apart.
That's fair.
I think the Astros are going to squeak in. So the only other real Astros note today is they did announce who the newest addition to the Houston Baseball Media Wall of Honor is going to be. It's going to be Bill Worrell.
Oh, well deserved.
Yeah,
well deserved.
Who's going to be doing that for?
Congratulations, Bill.
Yes. All right. Before we get to car, let's go out to the HRMP listener line one more time. Let's bring in Peter. Peter, what's going on?
Hey guys, I know you're up against it, but I'll be quick. I just wanted to see like y'all's thoughts like on the OC and all. Like, I mean, do they not sit down and talk to them and interview them and like show plays and schemes and who if so, how is Casario happy with what he saw?
Honestly, Peter, it's a great question. One that we can dive into a little bit more tomorrow, but we got a couple minutes here to talk about.
Yeah,
I don't know. They interviewed him. They knew this is the scheme that it's going to work.
You think
this
it was a full interview, or it was like, well, you're my guy, but here we go through the interview. Like, because that's the kind of – we've all been through those jobs, right? Like, I've been through jobs in radio, not here, but other places where I was told it's your job.
Yeah.
But you still have to go through the interview process to make good for legality reasons. I kind of think that's what that was in Nikhaly.
I think regardless, you would ask him what scheme he intends on running. And so they knew he was going to run the Patriots scheme. And that's probably where for both Nick Casario and D'Amico Ryans, I would question why they thought that CJ Stroud and this offense.
I think Casario believes in that.
Would be a good fit for CJ, though. Because that to me is a bigger picture of, do they understand their quarterback?
I think Casario just believes in it. I mean, it's where he comes from. And I mean, all that, I mean, from the people he's hired that he trusts that came from that system, it seems like he believes that system works.
Yeah.
Outside of Tom Brady. I think everyone else in the world believes it does not. But I mean, to the other part, like, did he have to draw plays? That's part of the problem. I mean, we laugh about it in the interview process. Well, do you think he got up on the chalkboard and drew up some X's and O's? But that's part of the problem of hiring a first year guy. Like, I mean, Sean's made the joke that was Nick Haley just Sean McVay's, you know, coffee bringer. Maybe so. I mean, clearly he's not running Sean McVay's offense. He didn't take his good plays. He's running the Patriots' crappy stuff from 2005. Like, but if you hire a first-year play caller, I mean, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the danger of hiring a first-year play caller.
All right, let's get to our car wrecks of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Ah! Give me bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
You want to throw me in real quick?
No, it's okay. So this is like one of the most obvious duh car wrecks of the day of all time.
Sure.
But it's because I watched the documentary last night before the Astros game. But if you want to watch a car wreck, watch the Charlie Sheen documentary on Netflix.
Good? Is it good?
It's a fine documentary, but this dude is something. I mean, he's very open and honest.
We knew he did a lot of drugs, but were you even knowing going in? You knew he did a lot of drugs, but finding out the details, were you, even you then taken aback by how much he was actually doing?
Yeah, I mean, the clip that's gone viral on social media that doesn't spoil anything. That literally his. Like therapists and them were literally telling his crack dealer to
cut it.
Just like start to take out to put less crack in it. And then eventually he stopped doing crack because he got so frustrated because he wasn't getting high anymore. And that's how he got sober.
That's a wild story.
It's something, this whole documentary.
That's a wild story.
It is a wild documentary. I mean, and they got a good amount of people in it. You don't see his brother or his father are not in it.
I'm not surprised by that.
No, and his father's very critical of him after, because he's like, it feels like it's Charlie's just making light of his issues in real life through this documentary, because he's kind of chuckling at times as he's telling these stories. But man, it is the car wreck.
Is the story told through his eyes?
Yeah, he's in it. It's him the whole time, basically.
Oh, interesting.
Like Denise Richards is in it. His next wife is in it. His co-star in Two and a Half Men is in it. His drug dealer's in it.
Is the kid in it from Two and a Half Men?
No.
But, yeah, that guy'd be a grown man now.
But man, it's something. It's a car wreck the whole time.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a few things on the list. One, I'll nominate infield defense for not catching pop fly in the first inning of last night's Astros A's game. I don't know who you want to assign the most of blame there to, but they all need to get it. Next one goes to Gary Cohen, who for some reason, look, put politics aside, put the decision aside from Matt Schaal to miss a game to attend his friend's funeral. Put all of that aside. Why in the world the announcer for the Mets would decide to talk about the personal decision of a player on another team to miss a game for personal reasons is beyond me. That's where I'm most like taken aback. It's not even Matt Schaal, his decision, who he was.
Yeah, I guess for some context, Matt Schaal was lived in the same apartment complex as Charlie Kirk.
Right.
And they became good friends. Yes. He's the Cubs' third baseman. And he missed the game on the day that Charlie Kirk was killed. He didn't play that day, and then he missed the game this week.
For the funeral.
For the funeral as well. And
why would the Mets toxic announcer decide he needed to talk about that?
Because everyone feels like they need to weigh on this. It's one of those things where I don't think everyone needs to have an opinion on everything. You don't need to share 100%. It with the entire world. But yeah, I saw that clip. It was just awkward to listen to. I think as like a fan, if I was a fan of the Mets, I'd just be like, this isn't why I'm here.
Yeah, if I'm a Mets fan tuning in to watch my team trying to make the playoffs and being in a fight with the Reds and the Diamondbacks for that last playoff spot, why do I want to hear my announcer talk about a Cubs player going to a funeral?
Yeah,
I think it's so bizarre.
Yeah, it's strange. I'm not surprised, especially with that broadcast booth,
because
they're a little all over the place. Yeah, we'll see. What do you want? What's winning?
Can I throw one more in?
Yeah, go ahead.
My power grid.
Oh, that's right. You lost power.
Yeah. Like, I was trying to play a game in our college football dynasty, which you and I have a game in tonight. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the show ends, we are bitter enemies once again. But I swear to you, if anyone else lives out there in Kingwood.
Brutal.
I mean, Joe, I don't know if you experienced this,
yeah,
when
we
you
did.
Lived there.
Yeah.
But I cannot. This is no exaggeration. Damn near 100% of the time it rains in Kingwood, the power goes out. Mm-hmm. And the weirdest part is never even at the hardest part of the rainstorm. It's always like at the very beginning. Like, as soon as it starts sprinkling, you know you got about 5 to 10 minutes before the power is going to blink. And it cost me, you know, playing one of our games in our dynasty. And then when it actually started becoming a heavy downpour, the power was on and was fine. But for some reason, at the start of every rainstorm, our power goes out in Kingwood.
Yeah, I was. It's one of the reasons why we left. Todd, the show says, I really need Detroit to be a complete car wreck and just lose out. I agree, Todd. All right, that will do it for us. Winner is...
Me yawning on air? I know I didn't nominate it.
I'll be honest with you, I think that means Ryan's the car wreck of the day.
Oh, turning okay. Ryan's off. The car wreck of the day. Turning on the microphone too early.
And you just sang part of the song, too, on the air.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hey, congratulations, yeah. Ryan, on getting your first one. I'm sure it won't be your last. You all get a couple of them. All right, that will do it for us. Tomorrow will be myself and Sean in here. Brian is with us as well. Thank you to Ryan for producing for us. Jeremy will be back on Monday. We will talk to you guys tomorrow. Soccer Matter. Nope. Destination 2026 up next with Glenn Davis.
All right, but before we go to break, let me talk to you one more time about Old Humble Distilling Company, Houston's finest micro distillery. If you didn't hear the last time, Old Humble Distilling Company has new hours, more time each day to try out their fantastic spirits. They're now open Tuesday through Saturday, 3 to 9, so stop by after work, stop by on the weekends, stop by anytime, and try my personal favorite, the Boomtown Bourbon. Plus, on Wednesdays, their happy hour, that's tonight, by the way, their happy hour goes all night long with $8 cocktails until they close, and they've added trivia on Thursdays starting at 6:30. But those aren't the only ways to enjoy one of their premium handcrafted spirits, because as I've been telling you about for weeks, they've got a scavenger hunt going on. So if you live in the Humble, Kingwood, Porter, or Atascocita area, or anywhere on the north side, go out and take part in the Boomtown Bourbon Hunt for your chance to win free drinks for 3 months. Yes, I'll say it again. Free drinks for 3 months. So how do you win? There are 8 hidden Boomtown Bourbon stops at local bars across the Humble area. The clues can be found at oldhumbledistilling.com or at their distillery and tasting room at 19103 Continental Parkway, just off FM 1960. So go out, solve the clues, sip the cocktails, then return to Old Humble Distilling Company to claim your legendary challenge coin, which unlocks a 3-month Roughneck Social Club membership and a free cocktail every week. It's free to play. All are welcome, but please drink responsibly. Try Old Humble Distilling Company, because life's too short for factory whiskey.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.